When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Support for this week's episode of Mother Folklore comes from our generous supporters on Patreon. New supporters like Kieran O'Brolchan, Kathleen J. Sullivan, Martin Kerrin, Ava, and Arthur O'Sullivan, Mila Buikas. We are absolutely so grateful, and you guys make it possible for us to keep making this show to the very high and factual standard which you've come to expect. Much love.
I'm saying nothing. And thanks a million to all our Patreon subscribers. And if you want to know more about joining and see all of the many, many fringe benefits that are available, check out patreon.com/Derek.
Mm-hmm. This week's episode is all about poetry, and particularly the most popular poems in Ireland, where we're going to try and track down if these things, if best love poems are something that's measurable, even possible. But before we do that, we've got a little bit of listener mail. Listener mail. Who's on the other end?
Does listener mail have a theme song now, Derek?
It should do. But they unorthodox have a themes tune for their listener mail. So as they go, I go. Anyway, this first message is from Bell.
Well, aren't unorthodox brilliant? They are actually very, very good podcast. Sorry.
I got the email. You got the email. I got the email. You got the email. Earth Plus. Y76P. All you hate. What is this? Did the quadratic formula explode?
Our first message is from Johnny in Belgium.
Hello, Mother Folklore friends. I enjoyed your conversation about baby names, how they're chosen and why they're chosen. And I wanted to share my story of how we chose or excluded some names for our child. Our daughter is half French and we live in Belgium, so we had to think about her name in an international context as well. This meant that we excluded some Irish names that relied on the aspiration of consonants that non-Irish people might not understand. So excluding lovely names like Quavon and Alva and Sive. But we had to exclude some other names for a very different reason. Two of my favourite Irish boys' names, Connor and Fionn. Unfortunately, in French, Connor sounds very much like Connard, which means arsehole. So that one had to be struck off the list. And Fionn, to Francophones, is spelled and sounds very much like Fion, which also means arsehole, and had to be again removed from our list. So yeah, that's just one thing to think about. In other countries, don't call your child arsehole by accident. We went with Una for our daughter, which maybe gets a bit of a laugh or a smile from the Spanish and the Italians, but apart from that is not particularly offensive.
Fucking fantastic, man.
Go on to Johnny. Delighted.
You should check. Johnny actually was a guest on our names episode last year in the 2020. It's excellent. Una versus the Kingdom of Belgium. It's an episode I'm very happy with. Check it out. And now we have another message from Tifford Oren.
Hello. Onan Gyarmon. Smisha Tara. Hi, I'm Tara. One of my favourite place names in Irish, purely because it's fun to say, is Tipperdorn. Now, I am biased because I am actually from Tipperary, Contro, but, like, you can't say that it's not fun, especially when you throw that shavu in if you add Cundé in front of it. Cundé Tipperdorn. Is that just not so fun to say? And then there's, like, a couple of fun names as well around North Tip, which is where I'm from. Ballyartella, Ballyanny, Ballyartella, Cundé Hubridorn. Anyways, that's all. Quite shallow. There's no deep meaning behind why I like it or anything. But, yeah.
Was that ASMR, Derek?
I'm calling it. I'm calling it ASMR.
I love you. I love your voice. Thanks a million for the message. Tibbredoran is fun to say. It's plenty fun to say. There are places in Tibbredoran with fun names to say as well. Do you know that all the ambulances made in Ireland come from one town in Tipperary?
You know, I could tell you're a father. I could tell you're a father because you're talking about the town of Nina.
Actually, the Nina is a funny, not so much funny, but a little quirk of language. Because Oscailge, it's Antainuk, the market. But in the Tishal Ginnaduk, that would be Balia on Einig. And Balia on Einig became on Einig, became Nina, became Nina. So, weirdly enough, the English version of it is adopted from the Tishal Ginnaduk, whereas in Irish we call it Antainuch, the Tishal Annamnuch. But yeah, Tip has got fascinating place names. Like, I know we've spoken on the podcast before about Horse and Jockey and how Oscailge doesn't have a horse. It's just a jockey. So I don't know, the horse got lost in translation or added in translation. But yeah, listen, thanks a million. Keep sending in your listener mails. We're always delighted to hear about your favourite place names, even if it's just ones that are fun to say. They roll off the tongue, like Tibbredoran or Cundé Hibbredoran.
And now, the show. Head Stuff Podcast Network, welcome to Motherfuck Lore, a podcast about words. Irish words, and words from Ireland. I am Dara Cushay.
And I'm Pádraig Quaimonic.
And you're very welcome to today's episode. Pádraig, I was just thinking, you know, Seacht na Gaeilge and all that. I was wondering what the most popular work of literature, or writing even, including song lyrics and so forth, in the Irish language is.
I mean, it's Peg by Peg Sayers. Judging by the amount of mentions it gets online, I suppose. I mean, I assume, you know, in the grand political scheme of things, that all publicity is good publicity.
Well,
so
that's,
everybody talking about Peg is undoubtedly a good thing.
I think so. I mean, like, it's like I don't see a possible downside there. It's funny how, and it's funny how it became this generational shibboleth, and how she became a Twitter and a social media icon in her own way.
That's reclamation. But look, yeah, I suppose, look, it comes down to how you would define popular. I mean, you're talking about like best loved.
Yeah.
Okay, well then, unfortunately, it's not Peg by Peg Sayers, which is grand for me, to be honest with you, because it's not even Peg Sayers' best book. Never mind, you know, and that's it. She didn't really write it. Like, her son Mike Filla wrote it, and so I mean, it was ghostwritten for her. But yeah, Peg has other works that are absolutely staggering, brilliant. Her collection of stories collected on Dukas.ie is amazing. So I don't mind that. What is the most popular piece of Irish literature? Yeah, so I mean fiction, like prose, poetry, lyrics.
We can consider them in different categories, because I think in terms of the biggest impact, I was thinking recently about the Paris Review. I was reminded of the Paris Review when I was listening to the Wind of Change podcast, because the Paris Review was supported financially and other ways by the CIA early on, as it was one of the projects they were talking about, how while not directly propaganda, there was the circulation of certain supportive texts was facilitated by the CIA, including the publication of Dr. Zhivago. But the Paris Review was one of them as well. So I was reminded of the Paris Review, which I used to enjoy reading in college and so forth. And they had a brilliant article, one of the most popular ever, about 5-6 years ago, about The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost.
Oh, yeah. And that has made all the difference.
That has made all the difference. Like a fada.
The Road Not Taken is exactly like a fada.
And one of the things in the article, which was written by, I'll give the author some credit, David Orr, because he wrote it's an extract from his book, and he compared it to how the Road Not Taken is the most popular poem probably in the English language, with the specific emphasis that the difference between its popularity and the next most popular poem is like the difference between, hang on, I'll say now, I'll use the exact words he uses. So according to Google, then, the road not taken was, as of mid-2012, at least four times as searched as the central text of the modernist era, The Wasteland, and at least 24 times as searched as the most anthologized poem by Ezra Pound. By comparison, this is greater than the margin by which the term college football beats archery and water polo.
Robert Frost, the Notre Dame of American poetry. That is a very, very good comparison. Like, you know, that is honestly, that's the difference between like a thoroughbred Grand National winning horse and, glue, basically. That's massive. It's not all those people searching for The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost. I assume it's very popular at like secondary school graduations.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's Robert Frost's oeuvre is he has a number of poems which are very popular in secondary school, particularly what our American friends call middle school and what we call junior cert. So they're very popular, that, and also graduation. There's this inspirational, that's not what the rest of his poems are like at all. Like his poem for the Kennedy's inauguration was nothing like that. He has long verses about overhearing arguments, which are quite confessional and completely different. But Road Not Taken, as well as being widely referred to, and possibly some of this is also, there's a very popular book which is often very popular in rehab groups and AA groups, The Road Less Traveled, which is basically taken from the line poem, although I don't think it's not a direct quote. I suppose you call it a misquote.
Is it a misquote or is it just misapplied?
It could be a copyright thing. Maybe he just M. Scott Peck decided, you know what, maybe if I change this slightly, I can get away with it.
Frost suffers wildly for this. Frost has a lovely poem called "Mending Wall," which is a really, really lovely poem. But there is there's a saying in it: good fences make good neighbours. And that has been quoted ad nauseum by people who believe that closing your borders is a good thing.
Yeah.
But the actual passage in the poem is, he only says, good fences make good neighbours. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbours? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out and to whom I was like to give offence. So, I mean, basically, Frost is saying, this gobshite says, good fences make good neighbours. And generations and generations of gobshites have quoted only that particular phrase, not realising that, like, Frost's intention, that is, good fences make good neighbours when you have cows. Not all the time, regardless of context. And yet people quote it all the time, regardless of context.
Very much.
Poor Robert Frost, he must be spinning in his fucking grave.
And you know who's spinning near him would be Samuel Beckett, who, when he said, fail again, fail better, I mean, I would say, worst word ho, the text from which that line is taken, is not a kind of an inspirational go-get-em kind of text. It's more miserable Beckett shite. I mean, no, Beckett isn't shite, Beckett's good. But this is the only people I know who've read this are people who've studied, who've done PhDs in Samuel Beckett. It's a very obscure text. What people are actually quoting is Richard Branson, who quoted it. And who decided, who said, go out, take risks, fail again, fail better. He may have heard of, wherever he heard it from, but that's actually, if you're using it in that context, you're actually quoting Richard Branson, you're not quoting Samuel Beckett, because the rest of that text is a fairly grim kind of monologue-y piece, which is obscure because it addresses a number of things, none of which are having the spunk to start your own business.
Beckett was not... he was not writing Entrepreneurship for Dummies when he wrote that. Yeah, fair enough. I think there's very it's very important to realize that, like, there's a difference between miserable shite and shite. Some miserable shite is quite good.
Yes.
Like a lot of what Beckett did. As far as Oscar Elga goes,
yes,
and stuff that's been, I don't know, like, what would you say is the most popular poem? I mean, popular. Well-known, well-loved, well-liked. Yeah. It's very hard to define.
It is. So if we're going to use the metric that David Orr used in the Against for the Road Not Taken, then which poem gets the most hits, you know? And there's an issue here, which I know this came up on Twitter this week, and Kevin Scannell pointed out that, you know, a lot of poems, the titles of certain poems have other meanings, such as Munkle, a very well-loved poem. It means my uncle. And means my uncle.
Translation work there, Derek.
yeah, it does. And so a person might actually be referring to their uncle as opposed to referring to the poem Munkle.
I get you. So this is again the genius, half man, half computer, Kevin Scannell, who can basically, I don't know what he does. I think it's some sort of wizardry, but he can tell a machine to comb Twitter for certain phrases used in certain contexts. And it's difficult to ascertain the context of somebody saying Munkle, because they could be talking about that beloved poem, but they could equally be talking about how their uncle isn't allowed around the family at Christmas anymore.
Exactly. And similarly, there are a number of texts called Misha Era.
Right, as opposed to the Pierce poem.
As opposed to the Pierce poem, which is it's his best known poem in Irish, because his poem, The Mother, and the... what's the other one?
Pierce has written
The Wayfarer. Yeah,
a huge amount of poems.
But I'd say his most best known poem, Os Gaeilge, is a Misha Era.
Interesting enough, it may be the best known, but is it the best loved? And let me come back to that, because I have a thing. Okay. I have a thing to refer to that points that out. But yeah, you're right, Misha Era. There are plenty of reasons for saying Misha Era, because Misha Era was also like a seminal documentary film about the history of the Irish Revolution and the foundation of the state and the Civil War, which I was forced to see when I was in sixth class.
Didn't appreciate it.
Not at the time, no, to be honest with you, because it was a 2-hour long silent movie. but like the fact that it had this just incredible soundtrack just went over my head, you know. It was just it was an unbelievable soundtrack done by Sean O'Riordan.
Oh yeah,
and O'Riordan, like the arguably the greatest Irish composer, certainly the greatest Irish composer of the modern age. And like this just went over my head, because it's like there's fuck all shooting in this. there's no nudity. I'm not interested in this.
Yeah.
But I mean, nope. I'd like to watch it again. I think I'd like to watch it again with fresh eyes and older eyes and more appreciative eyes. So yeah, I could be tweeting about Misha Era the film, and it might be confused with Misha Era the Patrick Pearse poem. Understandably.
I think Ivan Boland has a poem with the same name, which refers to those themes as well. So there's a number of foes and me's.
Yeah, so what poem then?
So I think in terms of a poem that is relatively sui generis, and while it does have another meaning, you could be talking about Sticky Jam. You are almost certainly talking, when you talk about Suv Millish, you're almost certainly talking about Suv Millish, the poem.
Yes, yes. The Suv Millish, Vascrin on Durris, absolutely. Lovely poem. And yes, because why else would you say Sweet Jam? If I was tweeting about jam, I'd just say Suv. If I wanted to say Suv Millish, the poem, that's what I'd be doing. I'd be referring exclusively to Seamus O'Neill's poem, which I think, was it in primary school? Certainly early secondary school.
We had it in junior cert.
Junior cert.
And I know it's, because this came up in a conversation recently, in that it's, again, it seems to have, Peg and Suv Millish may have been ships in the night, in that Suv Millish is better known to people who are post-Peg in school.
Suv Millish for the post-Peg generation. That's understandable, yeah. The Suv Millish are Vascron and Durris, Ach Vuch me an Curry Unam a Dairig, Mer Swinig me ar an Law, Avech an Vascron Glan, Agus an Law Bug ar Ira. There was Sweet Jam on the jam of the door, or the frame of the door, but I extinguished the anger that rose within me, because I thought of the day that the door frame would be clean and the small hand would be elsewhere. or missing or somewhere else.
It's Area is a beautiful poem, and there's so many. It works on so many levels, like the kind of the bilingual pun on the jam of the door and love.
Well, I think that's more me. That I think people tend to say door frame jam, yeah. J-A-M-B.
And Boscon, and then you have got the kind of on Boscon Glan, the kind of the little rhymes and
half rhymes and all that. Sort of, it goes back to the ancient Gaelic tradition of like there's alliteration, half rhymes, partial rhymes. But I mean, it's ser versiacht, as they say, which most poetry is these days, but so free verse, no structure to it. But of course, like old Irish poems would have had very strict meters, and you know, they would have had a certain amount of like for example Shakespeare's iambic pentameter. They would have had a beat, they would have had to have had internal rhymes, two internal rhymes, a bit of alliteration, a half rhyme and then a rhyme, a half rhyme and then a rhyme. I mean, it was so deep, and you know, they said that Gaelic Irish poets had to be both born and made, because you could only be a Gaelic Irish poet if you came from a certain number of families, but you also had to go and spend 7 years studying with an Ulf in an Ull school, which we have now co-opted as the term for university, but a school of professors, a school of poets, and you'd learn all these different meters, and of course, like, none of this shit was written down, so they all had to do it in their heads with these incredibly intricate rhyming schemes. Submilish is, I think you could be onto something there. It's universe. It's. I don't know anybody who doesn't like Sub Milish.
This is the thing. It's and some people, some cynics, some wags even will say, "Oh, that's because that's fucking short." And you know it is. But
some
like
of the best poems are short.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's so much depends on a red wheelbarrow.
Yeah, how many glistened people are out there quoting Childe Harold by Byron? I mean, fuck that. What is this, Byron? Fucking 15 cantos. Get fucked.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
this thing is mad, bad, and dangerous to know.
Percy Bysshe Shelley. There's a man who could write a nice, succinct poem.
Yeah, get to it. Yeah, give us your poem and get out of here. But there's the fact is, like, another poem that's very popular on the internet is the one. This is just to say, William Carlos Williams about the peaches and the icebox.
Good. Sure, that just became mimetic.
It became a meme, I suppose, and in its own way, the same way that Sub Milish. I say, so one of the reasons I thought this might be, I had a quick look. It's a poem I like myself, and it turns up just from scanning, searching Sub Milish on Twitter. It comes up a few times a month compared to other poems you might think of that Gavin, maybe from Catlin Mudd.
Oh, yeah. Gavin is a good one. I remember being at the Pubble Gaeilge in Electric Picnic, and there was a band performing, and somebody just roared out from the audience, like, you know, Aberdon, say a poem, and Matthew Acosta, the piper, just gave us Gavin, top of his head, and of course a large proportion of the crowd were Leaving Cert students or recent Leaving Cert students from Collège d'Aon and Collège d'Iscon, so they loved it. They went, I've never seen a crowd go that wild for a poem. Good poem.
So, Gavin's a great poem, but then what I'd say is, when I did a little search for Submilish, it gets mentioned in articles and stuff, particularly articles about parenting. You'll see, and the Independent, in the Examiner, in the Irish Times, Roisin Ingle has made a reference to it. Paul Howard, when he's doing his list of life lessons every year, and when it's his birthday, he always includes the lyric, the words of Sub Milish, and he's done readings of it for Poetry Week. He's a guy, Paul Howard had a very bad experience at the Gaeltacht, which he sometimes talked about, which he wasn't happy about. He was born in England and returned to Ireland as a child, and I think he was sent home very early on at Irish College once, and it's something that I believe that it's something he's still not delighted about, but that he talked about this Irish, actually, even in spite of those experiences, loving that Irish poem, Sub Milish.
It's a lovely poem.
And it sure is.
Like, the meaning of it is beautiful, and like, you know, as a parent, and normally nothing good follows that that clause, but as a parent, it speaks to me on another level. So if you wanted to have a look at the most liked, the most well liked poems in Ireland, the most well liked Irish language poems in Ireland, thankfully, somebody else has done the legwork. Yeah, the readers of the Irish Times, who, as we all know, are good Christians to a man, solid skins. The Irish Times heads, they chose Ireland's 100 favourite poems, and the Irish language it's not badly represented. To be fair, it is a very decent set of poems. And the thing about it, what I mentioned earlier on, you said Misha Era, his Páirc MacPhairis's best known Irish poem. It's not his best loved Irish poem, because it only comes in on the list at like tied for 80th. So it's way down the list, because like there's 20 poems or 19 poems tied for 80th place. And then there's All Legendary Obstacles by John Montague in last place, dead last place, but still in the top 100. But Misha Era is not as popular as Bansleva Equina Awak, which is not as well known. So like a mountain woman, a woman of the mountain keens her son, Bansleva Equina Awak. So I mean, it's a lovely poem, but I mean, I don't know what Pierce had this thing, right? That he would do, where he would like take poems and songs and stuff that were hundreds of years old. And he would just update them. Like Pierce is known to all and sundry as the writer of O Roisce de Ba Hawalia. Which, you know, and Pierce did write verses to make that about Ireland's struggle for freedom in 1916, leading ultimately up to his death. And it was quite prophetic in that. Like, I remember my fifth class teacher telling me about when Pierce was writing this. Like, there's a lyric in the final verse is like, "Mura me and meo in a yeag akshachtan, if I don't live after it but for a week. Granuel is Mila Gashki, Kik Fogart Fonak, all the Granuel and her 100 heroes, or 1,000 heroes, getting rid of the foreigner, getting rid of the foreign tyrant." There were about 1,000 people in the GPO, and Pierce was, I don't know, but Minter Ulton said it, Pierce was executed a week after the Easter Rising. So prophetic, spooky. But O Roisce de Ba Hawalia is much older and was originally written about Bonnie Prince Charlie, the Jacobite pretender, who lived almost his entire life in France, but was seen as a sort of a spiritual liege, a figurehead for Gaelic and Irish and Scottish independence under a king. I'm not really sure how that flies. But I mean, McGill Amar was about him, and so was the original O Roisce de Ba Hawalia. So,
and Rise and Fall of Charlie was used in a Fianna Fáil election campaign, wasn't it?
I'll leave the politics out of this. And don't get me started on that ortolan eating.
Well, he loved a good poem too.
This is What Would You Do If, the podcast to answer all of your What Would You Do If questions.
It's Callum and Jess here, and every week we look at how we'd handle different situations
before finding out what you should do if you're in them. So far we've looked at,
what would you do if you saw someone stealing?
A bear attacked you.
The baby started choking.
You were stuck in a lift.
You can hear those episodes and loads more on headstuffpodcast.com, with a new one every Monday.
Something else is also featured in The Guardian, and by our own pal Shockproof Beats himself.
Ah, Seamus,
the lad.
Famous Seamus, as we'll have to call him now. I still think Seamus has never done anything more important than when he got Harrods to print Arsmuck on a personalised jar of Nutella. I think that was just, I mean, he should have retired there and then. No, he's a legend. I love his column in The Guardian, particularly about raising an Irish child in London. It's really, really interesting. But he mentioned Submenish, did he?
He did indeed. He mentioned in an article about parenting, he mentioned that there's a poem in Ireland called Submenish, which is, and he suggested that it's mostly used to guilt children to not emigrate into London. But he has a book coming out this year, which I can't wait to see, Seamus Neill.
So, look, Submenish, yes. Where do we go there? Bansleva Equina Awak. The other ones that made it into the top 100 favourite poems are An Tarra Cir by Martin O'Dearon.
Oh.
Ihan Nulug na Mon by Sean O'Riordan.
Mm-hmm.
Misha Era, as we mentioned, by Páirc MacPhairis. An Bunán Bui by Cathal Bui McGillahunna, So I mean, like these are classics. Pangor Bon, Uther Anahad, anonymous author, one of the earliest surviving works we have, I think written into the margins of an old text, a poem about a monk and his cat, and actually really, really nice. Kilcash by Aegon O'Rahilla. And Kilcash was about the death of Margaret McGuinness, the Viscountess Ivy, who died in 1744. Kilcash is well known because it's a very popular song that primary school children learn. Do you know it? It's like, Cuddy Enemit, Faster Gun, I Met. Mm-hmm. Bum, 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 bum. So a beautiful, beautiful song. Cadienim went fast agon aimit, tadera na gailcha ar lor, níl tróch dar chilcash nar a tailach, is ní one for a cling of bra. It's a great rhythm, wonderful, wonderful words. It's just beautiful. There's also Cuairt an Bhean Oíche by Brian Merriman. And anybody who says that they've read Cuairt an Bhean Oíche, well, they may not be lying, but on balance, they could be spoofing you because it's really long. It's like Byronic in its length. Misha Raftery an Filla by Antona O'Raftery, about the blind poet. And again, this one is really, really well known because people would have learned this in school for generations. Misha Raftery an Filla, Londochus is Gra, Lasula Gonsulus, Lacunus Gonchra. Just a really evocative poem.
One of the lads in Imla said it's one of the first examples of the rap trope, "My name is X and I'm here to say."
Oh, yes. Well done, Lee. That is, yes. Great lads. Misha Raftery an Filla. Yeah, okay. So it's he's bigging up himself. Although it's a bit pathetic. It's a bit more like Morrissey, like this charming man. It's very
He's not moving in with his aunt and his uncle in Bel Air.
No, he's not, no. Nor does he have a hotel, motel, holiday in a Lincoln Continental and two brand new Cadillacs. Cool and Tea, again, by Sean O'Riordan. And this is just a wonderful one. I love Coolan Tea. Tatir na Nog, Coolan Tea, Tir all and Trina Kayla, Lucht Kerachus, Ekshul Nishli, Gon Brogor Huno Lena, Gon Berlach Huno Gaelge. Just brilliant, like that there's a little world at the bottom of your garden. And last but by no means least, in fact most, tied for 26th on the list, the most beloved poem in the Irish language, according to the readers of the Irish Times in 1999. Any guesses? The best love song ever written in these islands.
Is it Queen Artie Leary?
It is. It's Queenie Artie Leary, as we used to call it in college. Yeah, Queen Artie Leary is the most favouritest, most beloved Irish language poem. Now, this is all from 1999. So it's the pre-Twitter days. So, you know, we can't use an algorithm to ascertain this. But, you know, the Irish Times did the hard work, so we don't have to.
Sure, back in 1999, left-wing people liked the West Wing. Cut that, Brian.
The West Wing was just this trope that has affected American television. Sorkinism, like that if you have two men walking and talking quickly, then that means they're intelligent.
And not bumping into things.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, at least they're demonstrating multitasking. What's your favourite Irish language poem?
Before, I mean, for me, I think
about the song lyrics, which
for me, I suppose it's the one I refer to most in my life, and maybe they'll have different poems to refer to when the kids are older. But right now, it's of Milosh.
Mine didn't make the top 100, unfortunately. Saoirse by Sean O'Riordan, my favorite Irish language poem, and O'Riordan has like three other ones in the top 100 most favoritist. It's most favourite. I'm saying most favouritist because I am a ham. I didn't make it, but I love that one.
And Maureen Jarrah as well. I like Maureen Jarrah, the poem.
Oh, right. I don't know that one. Do I know that one?
It was in the Leaving. Well, it was in the Leaving once upon a time.
You and I did our Leavings at different times, I'm afraid.
It was...
you're the only man in the world who makes me feel young.
Well, so here I am. Take that. So that's but it's an old love poem, and it's a sort of unrequited love, which
a lot of them were,
because back in those days, you know, it was. But anyway, that's so. But then when you think about it, this was Irish song lyrics.
Oh yeah, no, sorry. Just before we go on to Irish song lyrics, this idea of like poems about unrequited love. those are really the earliest examples, well, with the exception of the likes of Pangorbon, which survived many, many centuries. But these medieval Irish poems about unrequited love, a lot of them are actually examples of personal writing. That this was basically, somebody was a professional poet, but nobody's going to pay you to write about Maureen De Vara. Like, why would anybody pay you to write about Maureen De Vara? You know, I want to pay you to write about what a great king I am, what a fantastic chieftain I am, how good I am to my people, how generous I am with my gifts and how brilliant the feasts I throw are. Like, nobody's going to pay you to. I want to pay you to satirize my enemies and praise me. I don't want to hear about your girlfriend or the woman you wish was your girlfriend. So the ones that we have, the ones that have survived, we're incredibly lucky to have them because there was literally no reason for these to be recorded unless they were particularly beautiful. And then eventually, you know, when poetry became less a trade and more an art, unfortunately, because I still would like to see artists and poets, you know, fiscally and financially rewarded better than they are now. But yeah, when it became more like a personalised art, then you started to get a lot more poems about courtly love and unrequited love surviving. Yeah, sorry, that's just an aside when you mentioned Maureen De Vara, but there's also like the Sian Colleen Alling and Doug McGraw. Ellen de Gough Ní Chulainn. You know, yeah, there's loads of them. Yeah, millions of those. But yeah, initially, poems would have been... I remember in college, we had to learn a poem called Avrini Ruach Morewa Lanon, which was about a king, basically. Yeah. The poet would have to pretend to be the land, and the land was a woman, and the king was a man, and the land would be saying, oh, what a brilliant, sexy king you are. I want you to do me, baby, basically.
Plant this land.
Challenging enough, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry, song lyrics.
So yeah, but song lyrics. Sorry, this came up before when we had Pauline EKG in, and we were talking about, you know, so beloved song lyrics and how they translate funnily into English. But certain, I suppose, if you were going to say what's an Irish language verse, a piece of lyric that's very well known or well loved or referred to, like dropped in a reference in articles or conversations. Like people sing, like I think Pucker Brilla is very it's fun to sing and it's fun to witness.
I think it was so funnily enough, Cork has of course done a lot for the Irish language, and we must give Cork its props and how great Cork is, real capital, etc., etc. But what links these two songs, The Langer and Pucker Brilla?
Is there a change of narrator halfway through?
No, it's not even that deep. They were both written by Cork people, and they were both number one Irish hits that contained at least one full verse in Irish.
Oh.
And there was nothing in between the two of them that topped the charts, Oscaelge. Would you believe that? All of the Enya songs, all of the Clannad songs, none of them had the success of The Langer, of charting in the charting at number one in the singles chart.
That's extraordinary, because I mean, I was thinking about, yeah, actually, Irish language number ones, because a lot of Clannad's actual hits are in the English language. They have some songs in Irish, and then you obviously use an Irish speaker, but the actual hits, like the Robin the Hooded Man and Sail Away and Yoko Flow and Sail Away, that's all
Orinoco English. Flow is in the English, yeah, technically. Yeah.
One of the best. One of the best new Twitter accounts on the Twitter is Enya Comments. There's a young one is just posting comments under Enya videos on YouTube, and it is incredible.
That's amazing.
It's just brilliant. Amazing. Everyone should follow it. I highly recommend it.
How did I not know about this? I have to find this.
Yeah, Enya Comments, absolutely brilliant. That's what is on Twitter. But well, we'll stick the link in the show notes anyway, because I cannot heartily recommend it heartily enough.
Oh my God. Look at this. Coronavirus is a blessing for students like us. We get to spend time with our books, nature and family. Hello from Belarus. LA Story is one of my favorite comedies. Enya music really is perfect here. Oh, this is amazing.
There was one about a girl saying, "I love this song because when I was in school and I had cramps, I was sent to the nurse's office and I had a hot water bottle and she put Enya on."
If there is a more perfect celebrity to bring out Ireland's official airline, Aer Lingus, that one should be Enya. And oh my god!
It's a treasure chest.
The Forge of the Angels is reminiscent of the sound of the Celts era. Astra et Luna reminds me of Wildchild, and the Ioxian Gates takes me to Ebude. It's all Enya, but with a new twist. How I'm gonna love this album, heart emoji. Oh, I love this account. Yeah. Thank you, Darren, for this service.
Absolutely, and Enya is interesting in that she's maybe not as explicitly outspoken as certain famous Irish pop stars, but
she's a fucking recluse, Derek. And fair play to her, more power to her. Like,
but on the one or two occasions she has spoken out, she has spoken with great truth to power.
I'm unaware of these situations. What did she come out on the Price of Freddos yet?
No, it was when the Fugees sampled one of her songs in Ready or Not, and there was a moral panic because people were terrified of scary rap music, and she was like, "Well, you know what? Like, once you get all the business parts settled, I'm actually cool with them because I think I love the support for refugees and that they do."
Fair play, mm-hmm. Fair play. Well done, Enya. But I do want you to break your silence on the Price of Freddos. It's a scandal.
We won't until
why will Enya continue to remain silent on the Price of Freddos?
Another day of silence.
It's just not good enough. So Irish language charting artists, like there are loads. Like, I mean, Planxty, Christy Moore, obviously, who was in Planxty, and like I think everybody who was in Planxty has had a decent chart hit with some form of an Irish language song. Like my dad has done a couple of albums that included some Irish language songs, because he used to be with a band called General Humbert. The lead singer was a young one called Mary Black. She was all right, like she's okay. She obviously, the Mary Black, went on to amazing things. One of the greatest singers Ireland has ever produced. And their two albums, General Humbert and General Humbert 2, because they weren't great at thinking up album names, to be fair, they were on Gaelic Lynn's record label.
Oh.
And the thing about Gaelic Lynn's record label is when you did an album with Gaelic Lynn, more than 50% of the songs with lyrics had to be as Gaelic. And it was a fantastic idea because it meant that they could preserve songs. And there were like so many traditional songs. It was all trad and ballads. There was very little new writing on the Gaelic Lynn record label. So it meant that like you ended up getting the, this amazing lyricist, this amazing singer, Mary Black, singing songs like Orcanach Cain Vicántia and Éineadh Valla, and on the second album then I think it was Mhíle Mar, which is just absolutely beautiful, and Éireann Fíochtar Baile is just a beautiful song. But I mean, if there wasn't the requirement to have these Éireann Gaeilge on the albums, they wouldn't have done them, because the appetite was for ballads that people could sing along to in the pubs. And they did those as well, like the lovely songs like Crazy Man Michael and Saint Helena. If you get a chance, listen to Mary Black's with General Humbert, their version of Saint Helena. It's a song about Napoleon's exile to the Isle of Saint Helena after the Battle of Waterloo. And if you ever wanted to hear an old traditional song using a French horn, I think it's absolutely stunning. It's really,
we don't get enough French horn these days.
We do not get enough French horn these days. Justice for the French horn.
Where?
When will you finally give justice to the French horn?
Yeah, break your silence.
Record a song about the Price of Freddos using a French horn.
Mm-hmm.
The people demand it.
That's right. And I was just thinking there about Ireland did enter a couple of songs as Gaeilge to the Eurovision in the 70s when we weren't good.
There was a couple. I know we did one.
There's a song called Bula Bus. Bula, Bula, Bula Bus. We used to enjoy
Christ.
That. It was all, what?
Oh, Christ, I said. No, I don't remember it.
Yeah, you would have been only small.
What year was that?
I think it was in the 70s. Because it was in black and white on the telly.
Well, I was not only small in the 70s. I was not even a twinkle in my daddy's eye or a pain in my mammy's arse at that stage. No, there was Sandy Jones with Keol an Grá in 1972.
Okay.
And that is it. That is it.
So where the hell is this bit of...
I have no idea, man. I think you might have had
Maybe it was in A Song for Ireland. Maybe that's what it was. Because there's a documentary on that. But that was a thing. And up until this was... up during the 90s, I remember a lot of the Scandinavian countries were... there was in the Eurovision, they had to enter in their own languages. But we were entering in English at the time. And they were that was during Ireland's period of... alleged competitive
absolute
advantage.
Domination. Absolute domination. There were two things that really ruined Ireland's chances in the Eurovision. It was letting the pesky people have a say. Putting it out to public vote was a shocking decision for the good burghers of Ireland. Because, you know, people, they want songs that they can dance to, and they want songs that they can sing along with their friends. They don't want well-crafted pieces of musical poetry like we were used to providing. And then the other thing was, of course, this idea that you had to enter a song in one of the official languages of the state. So what that meant was we could enter in Irish or English, Malta could enter in Maltese or English, Cyprus could enter in Greek or Turkish or English, and the UK could enter it in English, Scots Gaelic or Welsh. Actually, I think only English. I don't think they had official status at that stage. Mm-hmm. But anyway, regardless, it meant that we did have an advantage because of the Anglo-centric nature of the pop music market. Mm-hmm. We did. And when they took that away from us, I mean, we were rewarded with some absolute bops. Let's be fair, Satellite by Lena is an absolutely cracking song. It's brilliant. Well deserved to win it when it did.
And Euphoria as well, the David Guetta song.
Oh.
Bop.
Euphoria. Yeah, absolutely. Sad.
And there was that the Austrian one, was it the gig? That sounds like a Bond tune. It was excellent.
Oh, that was really good. Hard Rock Hallelujah by Lordi for Finland.
It has gotten better since they kicked us out.
Yeah, of course. Well, they never kicked us out. We just got shit.
Yeah, no, but they just, since they pushed us to the back of the queue.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest with you, we didn't help ourselves, like, because we went from, like, 1996 was the last time we won it, right?
Yeah.
The Voice. But a lot of people forget that we finished second the following year.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Roberts did. And then it really started to go down because we went to public vote on the Euro song then, A Song for Ireland. And I mean, I think the absolute low point is not sending Dustin the Turkey. The absolute low point is not sending Jedward 2 years in a row. The absolute low point is Dervish, They Can't Stop the Spring, written by John Waters.
So here, it seems like it seemed like a good idea at the time because they thought this is a song about the revolution, the Velvet Revolution in the Czech Republic, and they thought maybe this will resonate with East European audiences who traditionally don't vote for Ireland much.
But like,
didn't care. They wanted a pop.
Yeah, but like that's the thing. Like the one thing that people tended to miss in this was like, have you considered writing a really good song that people like to dance to? To be honest with you, I think Lipstick by Jedward was class. It's an absolutely smashing track, and not just because you can set dance to it.
Yeah,
because it's in the right time.
But yeah, that's good to know. A bit of set dancing to Lipstick. But I think
seriously, I've done it down in Oriscornan in Clondalkin. There's a dance teacher down there, Jim, and he's developed a set dance to Lipstick by Jedward.
I think he had done
last time we set danced, which is many years ago.
This decade, we're going to be overtaken by Sweden, and we won't be the Eurovision champions anymore. And in fairness, we haven't won this century. I don't think we've even come in the top 10 this century. We've been booted out several times.
We have come in the top 10 this century.
No, really?
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. Lipstick by Jedward, eighth place.
In fairness, Jedward don't get the respect that they're due.
They are national treasures.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I told you this, but I used to work with Jedward's mammy.
I think you did mention this.
We taught in the same school, and she passed away recently. Lovely woman. But I was teaching with her the year Jedward were on Pop Factor, Pop Idol, X Factor. I don't know what one they were on, but the year they were on their reality talent contest show, I was teaching, and yeah, it was tough at times for their mammy because, you know, they were getting an awful lot of abuse. But look, they've come good. They're absolutely brilliant. They're legends. Who would have thought in the year of our Lord 2021 that Jedward would be the ones out there speaking truth to power while Enya maintains her silence on the price of Freddos?
It's a shocking thing. I did 10 years ago. I just remember when all that was happening, we didn't expect to hear much from Jedward ever again.
And yet I think Tara Reid has been a positive influence on their lives, and and they are out there showing solidarity with everyone mm-hmm. who needs it. They're lovely. I love Jedward. They're absolute national treasures. And so is Enya, let's be fair.
Indeed. So before we wrap up, I mean, I'm just thinking, sort of, pop music of Skellige, there's nothing else is at the charts, is it, apart from the Langer and Pucker Bwilla, of Pucker Bwilla?
Nothing hit number one. Mm-hmm. And like, to be fair, like, chart music, pop music, it's very fickle. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? And you have to kind of understand, there's sometimes like a bit of this move to sort of say, like, why can't you just do pop songs, Oscuelga, get away from this old diddly eye trad stuff. It's like, don't like cultural cringe about the traditional music is just as bad as cultural cringe about the language. Like, just embrace that aspect of our culture as well. Shannos, trad, it's fine. Pop music, sure, brilliant. And a big, big shout out to the likes of Shulin and TG Lurgan, the summer college students in Coláiste Lurgan, in the Gaeltacht in Connemara, who have just been absolutely amazing at taking pop songs that are already popular, giving them a bit of Gaeilge, and just putting together these high quality videos. And it is worth noting that Frank McEvely, the beloved sound man of Coláiste Lurgan, passed away recently. So he obviously had such a huge hand in all of those amazing videos that we've seen, and you know, in helping the band Shul In find their feet as well. So as we say, Ar Yeshte Gareva Anam Dealish.
Definitely sorely missed, and perhaps just no better way to pay tribute is by ending with a piece from the Coláiste Lurgan.
Yeah, Frank na Fuaime, Slán.
Slán. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have a favourite Irish poem or Irish lyric, let us know. You can send us a voice message on the WhatsApp number in our show notes.
Motherfucklore is a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network and comes out every Friday. Thanks, as always, to Brian for producing and to Kirsten Scheele for the amazing art. And thanks, Gramila Maga, from the bottom of our hearts, to all of our patrons on patreon.com/Darrick. If you want to find out more about subscribing and all of the many benefits involved, just go to patreon.com/Darrick.
If you were a Patreon already, you will have seen the video AMA episode we released this week. That's when we'll be having more of those. for example, coming up soon. We record the Motherfucklore podcast on remotely.fm. If you were interested in recording your own podcast, we recommend that particular app. Until the next time, mind yourselves. Aslan.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
I have to run. I've got a meeting in 4 minutes.
Rock and roll.